Hello, everyone. It's time again for the Intelligent Campus with Greg and Don. Today, we bring you episode 4, The Safety Dance, creating a safe and secure learning environment on every campus. As always, our hosts are Greg Kovich and Don Otto. Don is unable to join us today as the extreme weather hitting the East Coast is presenting some network and communication challenges that requires expertise, so Greg will be flying solo. His guest today is Brian McPike. Brian recently retired as the Chief of Police and Executive Director of Public Safety for the University of Colorado at Colorado Springs. He now serves as the Director of Executive Ministry Protective Services for an international ministry, and with over 19 years of law enforcement, military, and campus safety administrative experience, Brian not only can discuss crisis management, but he can also talk about the best ways to plan, fund, and implement a safe campus strategy, and also how to deal with the aftermath of an on-campus incident. Gentlemen, take it away.
Thank you so much, Blaine. And Brian, what an amazing work history that you have, especially right in line with our topic today of campus safety, campus security. I certainly don't want to belabor the point, but I think that everybody that's listening to this knows how important the safety is of our children. Educators are entrusted with society's most valuable resource, and that is the future of their society. And with that, one part of that, especially in K-12 in the United States, is in loco parentis, or in the place of the parent. And so, like any parent, you want to make sure that you can keep your children as safe and secure. So, Brian, let's turn that over to you, because you have a lot of experience with the military and also now too in post university. So maybe you have some advice for us here.
Well, Greg, I appreciate that. Thank you very much, first off, for allowing me to come and talk with y'all and just be here today. It's a great honor of mine. And I love sharing this information. It's something that's really important to not just me, but I'm also a father, and it's important for me to share the information because of my kids. And we, just everything going on in our world today. This is a ongoing topic. It's something of great importance, and something that we share worldwide, not just here in Colorado or not just here in the United States.
In fact, I call it crisis management is the best term that I come up with for really what we can do as Alcatel-Lucent. I believe that, and Brian, I don't believe that you know about our campus safety solution, but what we've done is we've created one that is vendor agnostic so that as many people that want to invest in this type of solution can do it and don't have any limitations on it. But we focus on inputs or events that trigger a crisis. We are then looking at being able to broadcast that message to as wide a variety of communities as possible, both those that are on campus as well as those that are off campus. And so with that type of construct, I mean, have you ever had any type of emergency situation or a crisis that you had to deal with?
I think throughout my career, I think when we start talking about everything from, the events, when we talk about crisis, everybody has a different definition of crisis. To some folks, a crisis may be a shutdown. It may be something that's happening in their life. Whereas on a system-wide level, when I started in law enforcement myself, really we started seeing, I started viewing crisis as things that were going on around me, things I was responding to. And as my career has progressed, I've moved into more leadership roles, and I found that truly planning for crisis has become the kind of thing that not only benefits organizations that I work for or with. Truly, crisis planning is something that's a necessity. It's not something we can react to anymore. We have to plan for these events. And the type of product you just described is fantastic in the sense that it allows people to collaborate on various different levels across all platforms. Sometimes you don't really need that level of education. You just have to have the ability and the knowledge and the will to learn something new. And that's truly been the case with my career. I found in my learning about crisis has been one thing, and then taking certification courses and going through training has truly helped me prepare. And then having mentors and people around me who have helped me prepare for those things. Even things as today, talking about these, you always discover new ideas. And so that's kind of been my experience. And specific to your question, Greg, some of the things that I've been involved with throughout my career, truly, starting at another time when I was a SWAT officer, I really had the opportunity to see, you see people at their worst in law enforcement a lot of times. And one of the things that I was involved with was the Columbine incident back in 1999. I was brand new. I'd been an officer for about 4 years at that time. And I was with a new department. I was going through a new training program with them. And so we responded with hundreds of other law enforcement personnel throughout the Denver area. And we're on a perimeter. We were dealing with people trying to get into the area. And it was really an interesting time. It was a, I wasn't a father at the time. And I don't think I had a true empathy for what those parents were going through at the time. And so I learned a lot from that crisis in terms of not just what the incident was, but also the post incident and how that led to changes in law enforcement, not just, I don't believe just here in America. I really believe it led to changes throughout the entire world as far as how we view active shooter, how we view people who are trying to harm our kids and those types of things. How do we respond? How do we plan for those things in a school setting where we want a safe environment? We want people to feel safe when they come on a campus. We want them to know that there are things in place. There are pre-planning, all the crisis event that we're talking about right now, that's all been done. So when they come on, they have a great experience and that they know that their kids are safe when they go to school, when they go to a university, K through 12, whatever it might be. Parents feel safe sending their kids to that type of institution and that type of school. And so throughout our training in law enforcement, I've really seen an educational approach to it in terms of what law enforcement does, Greg, and how do we respond to those things? Do we wait? Do we move forward in terms of training? And the model has changed for law enforcement. And I really believe that's a collaborative approach because truly the introduction of what they call SROs, school resource mm-hmm. officers, into the K through 12 environment and the environment that I worked with at the university level here in Colorado, having a full-time police department that's integrated on campus and has the ability to work in terms of cooperation and training and certifications and just everyday impact with the local police departments. You can't put a value on that. Nobody could say, hey, this is worth $1 million or this is worth this.
You mentioned a couple things here now. You talked about collaboration and with the school resource officer, but you also mentioned before too, something that I hadn't really thought about, and that was planning. This is not a reactive, that this should no longer be, crisis management should no longer be a seat of the pants reaction. It should be something where you have a playbook, it sounds like. And how would you start that dialogue or that planning process?
Yeah, that's a great question, Greg. I think one of the things that we tend to get bogged down in sometimes is we all get fatigued. It's a term that I've heard a lot, and it's basically fatigue planning. It's you just get exhausted having to work through so many different things so much. But truly, when it comes down to it, if you haven't planned for it, you haven't prepared for it. And so what we do in the leadership realm is it's a continuous ask. It's devoting the time, it literally in your schedule, sitting down and saying, hey, today I really need to reach out to this principal, or I need to reach out to this law enforcement leader. And in my world, that comes down to, hey, can we grab a cup of coffee? Can we grab lunch? Do you have 10 or 15 minutes? In my former roles, I spent a lot of time just going to their office, just literally physically showing up and being around those people and always having a minor agenda, just saying, hey, have you thought about this? Or this is where we'd like to go with this. And working with those law enforcement leaders. And it's not just law enforcement. People, we tend to get a little bit myopic when we think about emergency response as being law enforcement. And really it comes down to fire, comes down to EMS and the dispatchers. Dispatch has a huge role in our emergency response platform throughout the United States, and first responders and how we integrate with all that. And I think that technology really takes advantage of that kind of ability for our computers, our smartphones, the software, the things that we do integrate, and the first people to answer those phones are our 911 operators, our dispatchers, and they're relaying that information out to the first responders. So I always made it a point to talk with fire, to talk with EMS, to try and get those people involved. And then from that basic level, start planning exercises. And that's one of the major things that I'm a true believer in, is that people use what's called a tabletop mm-hmm. exercise. And that can be a really simple, anywhere from just a 10 minute to 15 minute simple type of drill, where you're saying, okay, if something happens out in the parking lot, what are we going to do in this building? And you just plan it out and you actually exercise that. You say, this is your role, this is your role, and you give inputs. So it becomes a valuable tool when you have a team mindset for administrators, for school administrators, for people who believe in that kind of collaboration. It makes it a really great tool to learn about each other. So you get people on the same page who are coming in with one common goal.
One of the things that I especially like about this is that you can do those tabletop exercises, whether it's about campus crisis or even like a cybersecurity event. I've been seeing some of these ideas about tabletop topics on the Homeland Security TSA webpage.
It's a fantastic resource. We use it in my current role. They have a lot of open source information out there that they've made available. And you made a really good point when you talked about the cyber security types of things, because truly physical security and cybersecurity now are becoming more and more integrated in today's role. And it becomes more and more important for us to work with our IT personnel, as well as our first responders. But in any kind of situation, you really have to have everybody integrated, and that you have a business continuity model, you have a crisis model, not just the response, but what are you going to do for recovery? So one of the biggest challenges that we've faced, and one of the biggest things I've gone through in my career is here in the Colorado Springs area, is we had a major shooting that involved one of my former officers, and he ended up losing his life in that event. And the role that I was in was as a chief of police. And it was really interesting to me. It was, it wasn't just the human part of what happened. It was the aftermath of dealing with everything that happened so quickly, Greg. It was really interesting in terms of the human response to the tragedy. It was my officer plus two other innocent victims. And the community outpouring and support was just, it was just amazing. But the immediacy to the social media, to the media showing up on our campus, to the broadcasts, the live broadcasts, all the immediate information that was going out about the scene was immense, and it was a little overwhelming. So we had trained our personnel. We'd gone through a lot of the tabletop exercises and planning that we talked about. And none of us had really prepared for an event of that enormity, although we'd planned for some pretty big things. But this was kind of outside that realm of thinking. And so something that that I always go back to was our website got overwhelmed very quickly. And this happened on a holiday. It happened over the weekend. So when we talk about crisis, one of the things I always mention is crisis isn't usually going to happen between 8 and 5. Normally going to happen after hours, and it's normally going to happen on the weekends, and everybody's going to be on vacation, and the key people that you train with are usually not going to be available. And that's exactly what happened in our scenario. We had most of our leadership out. I was supposed to be on vacation. I hadn't left town yet. There were many people that were just unavailable physically, just out of communication when this happened. And so planning for it was key, in that we had a lot of things set up. But the aftermath of really just kind of rebuilding that business continuity model of getting the website back up to handle the traffic, to get the banners posted, having these scripts in place that beforehand that your communications personnel, they can put together the generic media statements, they can put together the areas of concern or areas of focus beforehand. And then when an incident actually happens, it's accessible by multiple people very easily. And that's the key, in my opinion, is everybody knowing where to go, either in the cloud or back to a secured search area on your website or whatever it might be, or a crisis tool such as you talked about with the Safe Campus Solutions.
You touched on a pretty interesting topic here with regards to communications. And that is something that after Virginia Tech, EDUCAUSE, which is an organization that serves higher education mainly, but really educators in general. And they had a white paper that was written, was co-authored by Mark Katsouris from University of Iowa and Richard Hack from Virginia Tech, among a couple of others. But those two used examples on their campuses on effective communications. And up until that time, a lot of folks were thinking that SMS was the right way to be able to get the message out. That's, after all, like for, especially in higher education, students would opt in or opt out of text messages and for access to have, you know, to be able to receive campus notifications. And what was interesting is that the title of the paper was The Multimodal Nature of Emergency Communications. And essentially what they were describing was, don't put all your eggs in one basket. Don't just rely on SMS. Don't just rely on email. Don't just rely on using robocalls to get that out. You need to, leverage social media. You need to, you know, via tweets, via Facebook, via your public facing webpage, as well as being able to communicate to folks that are in your campus and others. When you were at the university, did you guys have a mass communication strategy? Like using, you know, overhead speakers or outdoor speakers or digital signage or anything else like that? Or was it mainly SMS?
Oh, yeah. Especially in this day and age when we're all so hyper-connected. All of us are looking at our screens and we're looking at different things and we're seeing messages. And, you know, we have to take a vacation to get away from the types of media that we're using every day and go through a detox, if you will. But in our everyday life, we have to rely on these tools. And in the educational environment, it's critical. Our university actually did have a pretty robust system, an emergency notification system. And we relied on that heavily. But you key on some key factors when it comes to the social media. And you talked about the use of PA systems and things like that. We unfortunately didn't have that ability at our school. And not that, I don't know if we would have used it in this instance after the crisis that we experienced, but we did have areas such as the broadcasting and now that Facebook, you have Facebook Live, you have people streaming things. There's so many things that you have to be aware of that. For example, with the officers wearing the body-worn cameras, that is becoming something that people expect. They expect to see and have that kind of clarity, to have that kind of interaction, you know, what the officer saw, and then that video is eventually released at some point. But in terms of a crisis and response to that crisis, I always encourage people to think about something that we hadn't. We knew there would be a media response to any kind of incident that occurred on or around campus. But truly what happened was we had media streaming live from our campus within just a very short time of the radio broadcast, the police radio broadcast, because they obviously monitor those channels and that's their job. So when they figured out that one of our officers was involved, although it wasn't even confirmed, we had live media going from our campus, and that was a very big challenge in terms of recalling people back from vacation, getting people to actually speak to them, having those designates on board, and then having redundancy in all of those areas, because whoever your primary is might not be available. You've got to have a third party qualified and versed in being able to talk to media outlets and being able to talk to and liaison with your law enforcement first responders. I was tied up for probably the first 10 hours of that crisis and really unavailable for my own department in limited capacity in terms of what we were doing. So I was really relying on members of my command staff to make those decisions. And key members of my command staff and even my executive staff above me were gone. And so it was really, looking back, it was a fantastic learning opportunity that, and I really enjoyed the opportunity to talk about that with not just with you, but with other law enforcement leaders. And it goes into the corporate world as well. It flows well into the K-12, the university world, and the corporate world, because there really are similarities between crises and how you prepare and how you react.
Mm-hmm. Boy, you know, just interesting, because I know that when we go on vacation, we always say, oh, you know, in your email, you know, outgoing, you know, your out of office email, oh yeah, if you need this, you know, go, you know, reach out to that person. But I think it's an oversight, because nobody, you know, who backfills you on the crisis management team? You know, that's another consideration to have like that, because like you said, there's a lot of empty seats when the crisis went down, and people were scrambling to try to, you know, that may have not been on the tabletop exercises, or not as well versed, or were not prime to be in a leadership role during that crisis. So incredible. And I can't imagine. I mean, I've been in fires, you know, where I've, done some stupid things like run in and try to help people and stuff like that. But it's funny how when you look back on it, it was just a brief moment, but yet it seemed like everything was slowed down. And then afterwards, it's like you said, you were tied up for 10 hours like that. That's an incredible amount of time where you're just focused on just that one event and the aftermath.
Like I said earlier, we kind of get myopic in terms of that, how that works. But you hit the nail on the head when you're talking about just the leadership. A lot of times the leadership will, they'll think that, you know, it's not that they haven't planned for it. It's just, it's being able, like you said, Greg, to think outside that box, to kind of think about things differently, because it's rarely going to go down the way that we plan for it. It may look similar, but it's going to be different, and everything has its own flavor. Each crisis has its own uniqueness. And no matter how big of a tragedy it is, or it could be an electrical failure, it could be a water main break, it could be the most benign type of thing that actually has long lasting implications on our business models, on the ability to hold class, the ability to do different things. How do you broadcast the information out? How do you do that? I always use the term with my executive staff that nobody's mutually exclusive. There are no departments that are not dependent on one another in a crisis. And that's what we do now, is we have a team devoted just to getting ready for the different types of things that could be presented to us.
You know, if you had, let's say, a new superintendent for a school district and comes in, looks around, sees that there's no crisis plan in place, well, you got a couple bullet points for someone like that, like where would they start and what should they include and maybe who they should be including?
Yeah, that's a great question, Greg. I think for anybody from a top level position, one of the most important things is kind of advancing from the military model is you really have to look at who's been in place for a while. And so in that model, you might go back to your senior enlisted and say, you know, hey, I'm new in this role and this is my background. And you sit down, you start collaborating with that person in terms of what do we have in place already. And for a superintendent, that would probably, in my humble opinion, that would probably be within his chain of command, you know, with his principals and vice principals and things like that. But hopefully the people in those positions, and I'm just drawing this from experience where I live, I have met personally with my daughter's principal at the school that she attends. And I know who her vice principal are. I know who the counselors are. I know who the SROs on campus are. And while I don't know the specifics of what they do in a crisis planning scenario, I do know that they have plans in place. And so I think it all comes back to that collaborative level. You just have to reach out. And even if you don't have a plan in place, it's not hopeless. You can start a crisis plan from a blank piece of paper just by simply saying, who do we have in place? And what's your role? And once you define who those roles are, then you've got a blank slate of, okay, well, in this situation, what would your position be? And what do you think that your duties would be in that situation? And people, when they're allowed to actually talk and develop what they believe their role to be in terms of helping an organization during a crisis time, you really do learn a lot, not just about how they think, but what you learn what the resources are, because different people have different knowledge of those resources. You've got institutional knowledge from people that maybe they've never been asked in the beginning or during their career what they thought. And when they get the opportunity to discuss it, they get pretty excited about it. And you'll find a passion with those people that you may not otherwise have.
I recall in my tenure as a technology director for a school, for two school districts, the hidden guys, the guys that needed to be probably at every table whenever we talked about anything, but which seemed to be overlooked, was maintenance and custodial staff.
You could not be more right. Facilities, maintenance, those are the unsung heroes. I mean, we're all out in front, but those are the guys that are behind the scenes. They're the ones that know, Where do you go to shut the water off?
Oh, yeah. How do we do that? Yeah. Who do we call at the utility company? Yeah. They know. They know what to do. And they have the keys to everywhere.
They have the keys to the kingdom. And they're going to know the secret shortcuts. They're going to know how to get from point A to point B. Mm-hmm. And that's really where planning stuff in advance. For example, you know, when we do our crisis planning here, we work with IT. We work with maintenance facilities. But we also encourage people to think outside the box. You know, if you're stuck in an area, how do you get out? If you can't get out from the normal way you come in or out, ingress, egress, how are you going to find another way out? Maybe that's a window. Maybe that's breaking a window out. Maybe it's, you know, finding another way through a wall if you have to. But, you know, always encouraging them. That's where facilities can say, yeah, that's not going to happen here. Or this is the kind of window that might be. Or there's an HVAC system. If we had to, you know, get into some place, we could. You know, working with fire and working with planners and all that is just key. So
let's say if I summarize here, and perhaps you can correct me if I'm wrong, but it starts with a plan. The plan should be inclusive with as many people self-identifying what they can bring to the table. Secondly, use as many of the exercises that are available to us, such as like from the Homeland Security and those tabletop exercises, because that can go a long way, not only for times of crisis, but also in cyber crisis. Then next, train, and plan and talk to all three of the different first responder branches, the EMS, the fire, and police. And then lastly, be able to take a look at the way that you communicate and ensure that in cases like you mentioned where you have an unexpected demand, do you have enough bandwidth to your server? Does that web server, can it handle and accept that?
No, that's a fantastic summary, Greg. I think I would probably finish that off by saying a lot of times as an administrator, as a director, executive director, or whatever your role is, we're always worried about budgets and money. And while we can plan for things, for software and for tools that will help us, I certainly do that in my budget. It doesn't cost anything to sit down with people and really working through the collaborative relationships, working with the administrators, working through different areas of funding. I've been able to find money in different areas by having those relationships in place before. So when I make a suggestion, somebody is more willing to say, you know, hey, I have some funds that I'm not going to use for this, or I think could really help us in this area. That was the case recently here in my organization with IT. And we were able to find a much more collaborative approach in terms of funding and what we could afford because we were able to combine those things. But starting off, it's really just, you know, a blank piece of paper and having people have the ability to write out what they think and get them involved, and you get that buy-in, becomes a fantastic a learning opportunity and tool that is a truly valuable resource for any organization. You know, I think you guys have a great product. I think there's a lot of information that you can capitalize on, and really, you know, when you're selling something, it's tough. But having the plan in place, if you can get people to think about it beforehand, then they start to see the value in what you're doing now. And so when you come to them and you say, hey, this is a great product, it's an integrated product that lays over everything else. As a chief, I'm like, that's perfect. I love it.
Well, you know, one of the things too, I'm not sure if you heard the story, but there's a customer of ours in Long Island who their district is split in two different counties. And so in one county, I mean, at one school, if they call 911, it goes to the other county. That other county then connects them back to the district's home county. And that's, you know, there's a little bit of time lag there. So part of our solution is identify when a 911 call is enacted. So in those schools that are outside the district, they have a VPN to their 911 awareness tool, and that then rings on their desk. So they're no longer having to wait for dispatch from the second county. They're getting that call and monitoring it in real time. And the police chief said, he goes, that saves us 9 minutes. Do you know how important 9 minutes is in a crisis?
Oh, it's like a lifetime.
Yeah, that's what they were saying. And I was like, wow, I never thought of that. So I thank you very much from your professional view that this is something that you felt that we, because we, honestly, when I put this thing together, there was two engineers, Greg Gamboa and Scott Ellis. And they both were serving Advocate Healthcare. And when after Virginia Tech happened, I happened to be with them at Bell Labs. And I said, God, guys, we got to be able to do something with our, you know, be able to use loudspeakers on our phone or something. And they go, well, have you thought of, you know, da, 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 da. And that takes inputs from everything. And then also you can be aware of 911 calls and you could, I go, didn't. And so then that was the beginning of this solution, which has now evolved into all these three different pieces into this big thing. So
that's amazing. I mean, truly, guys, that from a law enforcement point of view, that's just amazing. Anytime that we can integrate the types of technology we're talking about and make it easier for everybody, it's ease of use. And then everything comes down to cost. And what I try and do is bring that approach of hey, we got to stop looking at this from the dollar level. You have to look at it in terms of brand and reputation.
Brian, I thank you so much for accepting our invitation. I feel like this is not going to be the last time. I'd like to get my co-host, Don Otto, and have you and him kick around some ideas on K-12. So look to another invitation and we'll call it a part two of campus safety and security.
Sounds great. Looking forward to it.
Thank you, Greg, and thank you, Brian. This has been the Intelligent Campus with Greg and Don. Make sure to stay tuned for more podcasts coming soon.